The Ed Committee will come to order, and we don't have a quorum yet, but we'll try and move along. We've got a hot schedule to get going here because we've got to be gone in about an hour and 10 minutes, and we've got people that would like to come and provide some oversight for us this morning. So we'll take up the minutes as we move along here and we get a quorum, but I'd like to welcome you that have come and haven't got stopped along the way because of meetings, but we'd like to also recognize that we have an overview here by the USDA Rural Development, and our director, Ms. Colleen Landkammer, is going to be presenting. So if we can have them have Colleen come forward and introduce herself for the tape, recognize who you are. And then
in our packets, we have the, I believe, the oversight on a PowerPoint presentation.
We thought we'd have a PowerPoint. Guess we don't.
Oh, we don't.
Well, she's going to get put up right now.
Oh, it's in the three-ring notebook, too, for members. So look there, and then hopefully as we get situated, we'll have one of our staff get things set up for us. But technology is always a fun thing to try and deal with, isn't it? I think everybody's either out finishing milking cows this morning or slopping the pigs. I'm not sure which, but I hope they take their boots off before they get in here. Okay, we do have a quorum, so before we have Ms. Landkammer present, if someone would move the approval of the minutes from the last committee we had on...
So move, Mr. Chair.
Oh, Representative Ward, you're very loud and very vocal. You've been calling the hogs this morning, haven't you?
Absolutely, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Any additions or corrections that you may have, members, to the minutes that we have? If not, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, same sign. Motion's carried. Ms. Landkammer, welcome. If you'd introduce yourself and just give us a brief background of who you are, and then hopefully we'll have the cameras ready and rolling.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name's Colleen Landkammer. I'm the State Director of USDA Rural Development in Minnesota. A little background on myself. I was county commissioner for 21 years in Blue Earth County. And previous to that, I was congressional staffer for Congressman Tim Penny. So I know the hard work you do, and I just want to thank you all for the work you do. It's not an easy job and seems to get more challenging all the time. So thank you. And I see Representative Morrow, who is right next to Blue Earth County. So. It's always a treat to come and see how many people I know and what a pleasure it is to be here. Anyway, I'm going to give you a brief overview on what USDA Rural Development does. I think there are great opportunities for collaboration and connections in federal programs and state programs. Our offices, we have 14 offices in the state. The main office is in St. Paul, about 110 staff. We are located all across Minnesota, and we have a renewable energy office in Albert Lea. Most of our programs are delivered through our area offices, and then our state office manages more or less most of our programs, with the exception of single-family housing guaranteed loans, which is all in our state office. Which one? This one? Next one. Okay. There's a map here that tells where our areas, how they're delineated across the state. We have 5 area offices, and the 13 offices in greater Minnesota are in those areas. So we're going to give you a colored picture of that, which will be much more helpful. We're kind of 3 legs of a stool with the programs we deliver. We do housing, both single and multifamily housing. We do business loans and a few grants, and that's a bunch of programs, but renewable energy is in that, and anything from a very small entrepreneur to a large business that wants to expand or grow. We also do community programs, community facilities, which is all about improving infrastructure and facilities. We often partner with state agencies to fund water and sewer, stormwater projects. PFA and Rural Development has a great relationship, and we continue to leverage each other in that process. The population for our water and wastewater programs is 10,000 people. For our housing programs, it's under 20,000. And for our business programs, it's under 50,000. So when you think about our business programs, we can do most communities in this state. There are very few that aren't eligible. When I go to our housing programs, we do direct loans and loan guarantees. So the loan guarantees are for the average person who wants to buy a house. We guarantee that loan at the bank. For direct loans, which are for low and very low income people, we work one-on-one with them to make sure that they can afford to be in that house, they can afford to make the payments, and but they might not have the down payment to get in. So we work one-on-one with them. We also do loans and grants to help people with essential home repairs. And we also can help rehabilitate multifamily housing facilities. We also do some rental assistance to qualified residents who live in our multifamily housing residences. A few examples up here of nice pictures. Pictures tell 1,000 words, I think. The top left is a new home for a family in Fergus Falls. The bottom left is new homeowners inside their home in Alexandria, and you see Adam's lovely face. I don't think I introduced Adam, and I should. Adam Chick is our public information officer for USDA Rural Development.
Welcome.
And to the right, we turned a historic building in Little Falls into a 26-unit multifamily housing complex. And I know the representative from there knows it well.
Ms. Landkamer, is there some criteria that you have for direct loans to not only single-family, multifamily, but also businesses? Is there guidelines that you go by?
There are. With housing, there are some income guidelines that you have to qualify for. And in multifamily, if you're going to be subsidized, there are also income guidelines. The population limits are there also. You know, for housing, it's got to be under 20,000 population. Business under 50,000. So there is criteria there. There's also in the business quite a bit of, you know, what's the equity? Can you pay the loan back? A multitude of questions that we ask in order to make sure that they're viable businesses, that they're businesses that have a chance of making it. We certainly don't want to invest in anything that doesn't make sense.
Thank you.
Thank you. In our business programs, we have 16 programs. I think that's one of the challenges. USDA Rural Development has over 44 programs that we deliver in one form or another. Some of the highlights are our business and industry loan guarantee programs. That's for very small businesses, but usually large businesses. B&I is usually, could be up to $25 million. So it's a significant piece. We also do Rural Energy for America program, which is all about renewables and energy efficiency. Those rules and regulations are being rewritten right now. In the past, we funded a lot of grain dryers, which scores very well for energy efficiency, but the administration isn't sure that's where most of our money should be going for renewables and energy efficiency. So those regulations are being rewritten. value-added producer grant programs, that has to go to a producer. The interesting thing about that program, and it's one of our few programs, it doesn't have to be spent in rural Minnesota. It can cross into urban Minnesota, but the money has to go to a producer. So the producer's usually in rural Minnesota. Rural economic development loans, red legs are called, and that's usually where we go through, for instance, a co-op, Rural Electric, where we fund X amount of dollars to them, and they do a revolving loan fund, which I always say is a gift that keeps on giving. You know, you put it out once, it comes, it's paid back, and it continues to give. Just a few more pictures. Top right, value-added producer grant, vegetable grower in Owatonna. Bottom right, a concrete facility that we helped provide gap financing for in Albany. And to the right, Rural Energy for America program grant helped finances family-owned wind farm in southwest Minnesota. Renewables are really important to us, and we need to figure out how we can, as a state, do a great job on that, because we don't want to be dependent on foreign oil. Our community programs, water and sewer, there's always a high demand for that. And so how do we make the best use of those dollars? So we do loans and grants for water, wastewater, and stormwater treatment, which is really critical in a lot of our rural communities. We also do loans and grants for essential facilities. For instance, hospitals, nursing homes, fire halls, ambulances, police vehicles, daycare centers, the multitude of things that really build capacity in community. Some more pictures, wastewater treatment ponds in Dent, Minnesota. Bottom left, new fire hall in Wolf, Minnesota. And right, a new water tower in Zumbro Falls. Our agency also does telecommunications and electric programs, which is really critical to this state, when you look at businesses, when you look at connectivity, when you look at the ability to work anywhere in this state and have a viable business. So we do broadband loans and grants, distance learning and telemedicine grants. We just did one in Adrian a while ago. The pharmacy was going to go away. We were able to do a telemedicine telepharmacy where they can work with the city of Worthington with the pharmacy and still have that in Adrian, which is really significant for the people who live there. We also do electric loans to build and maintain rural electricity. All of the telecommunications and electric programs are actually run out of D.C. in cooperation with the state. As it says, we financed over $190 million in broadband just lately. Our numbers get, you know, it's all about the difference you make in somebody's life. Sometimes numbers are a little difficult, but let me give you a few.
Ms. Lankhammer, we have a question here.
Sure.
Representative Maurer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Lankhammer. You were just talking about the broadband numbers, and I really have two questions, Mr. Chair. First question is a specific one. One of the counties I represent, Sibley County, is trying to do fiber to the home, to the farm, and to the business, to everyone in Sibley County. Renville County is now partnering in, it looks like, and Nicola County is now starting to talk as well, given the deep digital divide that we have in some of our rural areas. Could you talk a little bit more about the broadband loan and grants? And the availability of those grants, can any county or governmental unit that's maybe seeking to do this get the grants? Is it a competition? Are there limited funds? If you could expand a little bit more.
Ms. Lankhammer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrill, it's a wonderful opportunity. We just went through the American Recovery Act dollars, where there was a lot of stimulus money that went into broadband in this state. We also have another program that works through D.C. where any county can apply. It is a competitive process, and it runs through D.C., but it is critical that all of our state be covered. So one of the things that we're looking at in the state is how do we work with our programs in D.C. with the private sector and with the state in order to make sure that no matter where you live, you have the availability of broadband in order to run your businesses or do your homework, the multitude of things that are so critical for our state as a whole. So that's a focus that we've got. But there is an ongoing program. As everybody knows, I think, we're all under a continuing resolution in Congress. So how much money we're going to have, we don't know until Congress decides. The CR goes until, I shouldn't use those terms, the continuing resolution goes until March 4th right now. And we'll see what happens after that. As you've all heard, I'm sure they're talking about cuts. But broadband is a huge focus of USDA rural development, and it's kind of like if the railroad didn't go through your town didn't stay. Broadband, to me, is the same thing.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for that information, because I completely agree with you. I have an iPad right in front of me, and I've got one of the school districts in Sibley County that has actually issued iPads to the students, in part to save money on textbooks, in part to enhance the educational experience and the preparation for our students to be in the 21st century workplace. So what's happening, though, is that students are going back home, often on the farm where there's only dial-up modem, and they can't actually access the information. We've got telemedicine opportunities to enable folks to stay at home. I've got residents in the Winthrop area, for example, who need to be able to check in with a nurse, but they can't readily do so without this. I agree with you. We brought electrification to all homes. We brought telephone to all homes and all farms. And so I know that there's consternation at times about federal funding and what the federal government might be participating in. And I, for one, tend to agree with you that broadband is one of those areas where it's essential to get assistance, because no farm community can bring this type of resource to the farm, to the home, to the business, simply through subscription fees or monthly charges.
Ms. Van Cameron?
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, I just think you are so right on. And the thing is, it makes for a better quality of life for people, and also has the opportunity to save money. And I hope all those kids are going home and teaching their parents how to use the iPad, because I think that's where our disconnect is sometimes. But it's critical that we look at that as being something that everybody should have access to.
Representative Franson?
Oh, I just wanted to echo Representative Morrow's sentiments. So thank you.
Any other questions? Proceed, please.
Okay. Where am I? Funding numbers. Back to the interesting numbers. Typically, we invest between about $450 million and $700 million throughout Minnesota in each year. Now, to me, that's real money. So that's pretty significant. During the American Recovery Act, we were able to invest an additional $700 million above and beyond our regular allocation in 2009 and 2010 due to that stimulus funding. It's made a huge difference, and it's made the quality of life in our rural communities just so much better. The Farm Bill will determine what our funding is in the future. I may be see this through different color glasses than many people, but I just think rural development makes such a difference in rural communities. It allows people to live where they want to live and be able to run a business, have a good quality of life, and raise their family in great places. So I want to emphasize to each and every one of you, we have staff across the state. We're willing to meet with you one-on-one, meet with your constituents, whatever you want. Just let us know. And we are one of the few agencies where you can work one-on-one with a staff person.
Oh, thank you. Representative Fritz, you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually have a comment as to your staff and that how wonderful they are. I've had constituents who have received help, an elderly couple with some plumbing issues in their farmhouse, and you came through, and they called and wrote to me explicitly telling me how wonderful the people were from your office working with them. And I think I did send you a thank you note on top of that, but that helps so much in my population of elderly people who sometimes need a little extra hand-holding through these processes. So I appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you. I echo Representative Fritz and Representative Morrow and all the folks that have said that, what a great job you do. I represent one of your offices in Baxter in the area that I represent. And, you know, one of the things that I guess I wanted to ask you is, I think, you know, out of the 37,500 constituents that I represent, I'm guessing that most of them don't even recognize or realize that there's a USDA office in Baxter, quite frankly. And Representative Purcell and myself were at a some investors. We had an investor. There's a bunch of entrepreneurs that want to start a small, they're called SWTs, small wind turbine, right? Small wind turbine company in our area. And, you know, we were looking for how we could help them. So let me, here's my question. How do you market? How do you, you do great programs. We just heard that. How do you how do you let people know about you? Because I think that more people need to know about you. I mean, there's some problems with that, too. I understand that. But how do you market?
Ms. Lancamer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ward, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I frequently think we're the best-kept secret there is. We do wonderful, wonderful things, but not many people know about us. That's Adam's job. we work really hard to get the word out. We're also, I've been talking to the Commissioner of Agriculture, the Commissioner of Deed, the multitude of partners that are out there, and how do we do more things together? You know, we do housing. Last year, the Greater Minnesota Housing Fund, Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, and Rural Development went around and to different areas in the state just to talk about the programs we do, how we do that. We've got a long way to go, but we work hard at marketing, but it's really challenging. And I'll just tell you a story about somebody from Baxter. I'm a member of the RED Group, which is the Rural Economic Development Group. It's rural economic developers across the state. And we meet and talk about how can we leverage each other, how can we get the word out, how can we do good economic development without duplicating. And so they had some small businesses presenting that day, and there was a woman from Baxter who talked about a technology company they had started, and they had hired a lot of people, and then the bottom fell out. And so she was going back that day to lay off their last employee, which was her mother-in-law. And, you know, just the tightness of credit, the challenge of, you know, trying to keep a business going when the bottom had fallen out of many things. So I went up to her afterwards, and I said, you know, you might be interested in talking to Rural Development. You know, we have some business programs that I think would fit. And she looked at me and she goes, but you don't understand, I'm not in agriculture. And I said, that's the beauty of it. You don't have to be. But I think you're so right. We need to do a better job, and it's something we strive to do. But you can also help us, because when you have constituents call, we'd love to meet with your constituents and talk about the opportunities there are for them. So thank you, Representative Ward.
Representative Morrow?
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Ankemer, I was wondering if we could just go back for a moment to the community programs slide. And as I'm looking at it, I know a number of us have heard from, for example, our local firefighters about the need for equipment, talking about used equipment, donated equipment. There was an article in my paper that pull tab funds from a charity were used to buy a fan for a firehouse. So I know that our local communities are facing some difficult budget cuts. I'm wondering about, as I look at the second bullet point here especially, what the demand is like for loans and the grants from maybe some of our local communities. Is there enough money to help with the nursing homes, fire halls, and the like? And I'd like to get a sense of the demand and whether you're able to meet all the demand that you're getting from Minnesota.
Mr. Chair, Representative Morrow, no, there's not enough money. Let me be real clear about that. And actually, when the stimulus money was put in place in 2009, and we spent it all, we now have a longer backlog at this point in time than we had before we got the stimulus money. There's a huge demand out there, and I think there's a multitude of reasons for that. One is budgets are tight. I mean, I think we all understand that and are trying to figure out how we manage this stuff. The other thing is, I think more people are realizing the needs that they have. one thing that we're trying to do at Rural Development, knowing that there's not enough money, and hopefully Congress will give us more, but I'm not holding my breath on that one. But how do more partnerships take place out there? I remember talking to a community. They were 5 miles from a regional center, and they wanted their own fire hall and fire trucks. And I said, but, you know, during the day, most of the people who live in your community probably are at that regional center working. And he said, well, yeah, but we want our own. You know, we can't do that anymore. So, you know, being thoughtful about where the money goes, what are the priorities, and how do we make sure people are served, you know? If you're 30 miles away from everybody, you do need your own fire equipment, your medical equipment, all those things. And what can we do with fire? You can't do a lot with technology. But with telemedicine, with telepharmacies, with business, technology can play a huge part. So trying to make sure that our dollars go in the right spots that do the best for the state of Minnesota as a whole.
Members, I just want to remind you that we have another set of testifiers, and so our time is getting short, but I do have another question. Representative Vogel.
On that. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to also echo the thanks from the rest of us. I, as a realtor, have used rural development quite often, and so we appreciate it. I know you guys do a pretty good job of marketing, at least to us, and letting us know that you're there, and as a realtor organization, we do realize that and understand that. And then getting to your last comment, the problem is, so we run out of money long before we run out of people looking to buy, and I understand that, but we appreciate all the help and the work that you do to further things along. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lankhammer. Thank you, Mr. Check. And we'll look forward to seeing you just down the line a few months, maybe weeks from now. So thank you for your testimony, and glad you could be here.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, and we really look forward to working with you. Thank you.
Thank you. We now have Farm Service Agency, Mr. Shelstead and company. If they could come forward and introduce themselves for the tape and then make the presentation, that would be fantastic.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's an honor and a privilege to be here. My name is Stuart Shelstead. I work with the USDA Farm Service Agency here in St. Paul. I'm a title, I guess, Farm Loan Programs Chief, which is a little bit outdated, but I generally have program delivery oversight for credit programs across the state of Minnesota. Tom, do you want to introduce yourself? Where is he? Oh, he's doing handouts. There he is. Tom DeCock, Farm Loan Specialist. He and I team up together here in St. Paul with other individuals to provide these programs. A little bit with, I'd like to, Mr. Chairman, familiarize folks if they aren't familiar with the USDA FSA credit programs. These credit programs have been around since forever, back in the 30s, maybe before then. It's to provide temporary assistance through loans and loan guarantees to farm families who cannot otherwise obtain credit. Our goal is to help people, provide them advice and guidance on how to move on to commercial private credit. Where are we at? We have a little bit of a freeze up here. Okay. Next one. So we do, FSA does not compete with the commercial sector. Matter of fact, we actually do a lot of partnering with the private sector, doing joint loans for especially real estate purchases with beginning farmers. For example, another lender will do the first 50% of a purchase, and we'll do the other 45% or whatever it takes to make the loan. So our sole purpose here is to help farm families become successful. So who are FSA farm customers? A lot of them are beginning farmers. Matter of fact, about 40% of all of our loans go to beginning farmers. and also socially disadvantaged farmers, which would be considered minorities as well as females. We have targeted funds to those groups of people. And of late, we've made a lot of socially disadvantaged loans of interest, especially along the I-35 corridor heading up to Duluth with specialized operations up there. So actually that part of it is quite fun. We also look at farmers' non-traditional enterprises that other lenders are hesitant to make loans on. They may not have the experience with these non-traditional enterprises. So we'll go ahead and work with folks and try and do that. We also work with farmers experiencing economic production or physical disasters. The last couple of years with, actually going back with low milk prices in 2009, high feed prices currently, hog situation where people were losing money just drastically since October of 2007. We've done a lot of loans to farm families to help them stay in business and recover. And a lot of that, too, is partnering with lenders, including Farm Credit Services out there. We basically have two types of loan programs. One is the direct loan program, which are direct U.S. Treasury dollars. The other is a guaranteed loan, where a commercial lender is willing to make the loan, but there's a weakness in the financial statement or cash flow, and will issue a guarantee. Most of them are 90%. Certain cases will go up to 95%. I liken it to an insurance policy. If there's a loss on the loan, we will pay the lender 90 to 95% of any loss that's experienced out there. A little bit, and I think we have our history here. If you take a look at this chart, I always find this pretty interesting. The demand for FSA loan assistance generally will follow the year of an event, whether it be a natural disaster going back here or economic. If you look back, there was an uptick in 1984, 85, and 6 from the economic crisis, if you will. We're basically on our guaranteed loan program. We ended up paying out about 40 cents on every dollar that was lent. Hopefully we'll never return to those days. You see, 1989 was an uptick from the drought of 1988, where we ended up lending a lot of money. 1994 was a strong year of demand due to flooding in southern Minnesota from 1993 floods. And then we had an economic downturn in 1998. So 1999 was big. Now what kind of gets interesting here, the 2000s were, for the most part, relatively stable. The last, going in back to 2008 to 2010, we've seen a serious increase in the demand for the credit programs, in not just Minnesota, kind of nationally. Yet you look on the news, and boy, commodity prices are high. Where's all this demand coming from? And there are some things. I think in your packet you have a sheet. Yeah, it's probably at the end of your packet. I just want to talk a little bit about that. Since fiscal year 2008 to fiscal year 2010, for direct loans, we've seen a 28% increase, roughly, in demand. Guaranteed loan demand has gone up over 66%. And just looking already in fiscal year 2011, our first quarter, October, November, and December, we were up 25% in loan demand. Why is that? We look at the livestock sector. We have lenders coming to us that historically, we work with about 400 lenders across the state. And I think, Tom, last year we had about 500 lenders at various trainings, and it's almost a little bit scary, Mr. Chairman, to go to these meetings and go, wow, all these people are there. And it's good that we've been there to help folks, but so we have the livestock stress, also increased scrutiny by lender regulators. The bean counters are out and about looking at the books, and some of the stories I hear from lenders where They're just scrutinizing everything. Small personal loans to long-standing customers are getting looked at and asked about. Also, an increase here is due to just an increase in appropriations from Congress. I might kind of revisit that in a couple of minutes if you would like. But we've had a serious increase in demand the last couple of years. And a lot of these families that have been coming to us have either never had the need for FSA credit assistance, or we helped them get started 20, 30 some years ago. A lot of the age of our applicants are late 50s and well into their 60s. And they're basically mortgaging up assets. Some of them had been, especially livestock folks prior to 2007, very stable, huge net worths coming in, and they have serious issues out there. A little bit on the portfolio side, too. Nationally, there's about 71,000 credit customers in Minnesota. For our direct loan program, direct U.S. Treasury, we have right around 3,000 direct customers with $390 million outstanding. In 2010, we put out about $112 million in direct loan funds. And that was the highest, Tom, since 1986, I think it was. Guaranteed loans. We have about, there's about $11 billion outstanding nationally. In Minnesota, we got about 2,000 guaranteed loan customers and about $650 million outstanding. Last year, we made 760 guaranteed loans for $217 million in our portfolio. Crept back over $1 billion. It was probably 2 years ago, people like Tom and I were visiting and saying, gosh, if this demand keeps up 5, 6, 7 years from now, our portfolio will cross the $1 billion mark. Well, we missed the mark. It was happened within just a couple of years. So the demand has been just startling. And just a little bit, historically, Northwest Minnesota has been the highest demand area. That has shifted. Now it's go about Highway 12 and south, especially with the livestock, but not all livestock. Also, grain farmers, surprisingly, that have had some issues. Cash rents. We've heard some anecdotal stories, well, they're true stories, about three-year leases and all the rent up front in western Minnesota. So it's just a lot of things going here, and I think lenders across the state are nervous, even with fairly solid farm customers.
Mr. Shelston, yes. We have a question here.
Yeah.
Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Shelston, I'd ask the same question I was asking USDA. I don't know enough about your program to understand. Are you able to meet all demand? Are you limited in the demand you can meet? Is there unmet demand?
Mr. Shelston.
Okay, thank you. That's a very, very good question. One, too, that is difficult to answer under the continuing resolution. It looks like for guaranteed loan assistance, where we'll issue the guarantee, we're probably going to be okay this year. Now, having said that, the when I use my crystal ball to project things, I'm usually pretty good. I haven't been good the last few years. I've been way underestimating things. So when I look at new estimates, I bump up what I really think is going to happen, and I'm still short. The direct side, direct farm ownership loans, we currently have a serious backlog. I don't know, many millions of dollars. I don't have the numbers in front of me. Historically, everyone will get funded. And again, it's really a wild card what the new Congress will provide us for funding. Historically, Congress has provided very good funding for the credit program, so we're hoping that the support will continue to be there.
Follow-up, Representative Morrow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I know we're trying to move along, but what happens if a farmer isn't that loan and you aren't historically able to get to them in the coming months, if you can't make that direct loan? Okay. What happens to that person?
Mr. Shelston.
You know, in many cases, there will be bridge financing. Another lender will come through with temporary credit, or a relative will step in. until the U.S. government comes through with funds. If they absolutely can't get money, they won't be operating. And we did have a few cases where we were had a gap in funding last year where that happened.
Please continue.
Okay. In Minnesota, we have 79 Farm Service Agency offices, where 22 of those offices have full-time credit staff that we work with, but we do have 79 points of delivery, and all offices have some type of delivery mechanism out there. Our credit teams usually will have a farm loan manager, two loan officers, and a technician to deliver that, and they'll cover one or more counties. Three general types of loans: operating loans, which paying farm expenses, purchase livestock, refinance debt, farm ownership, purchase real estate. The one thing we can't do with direct farm ownership funds is refinance debt. That's by statute. The short story on what FSA loan funds can be used for is any farm and home purpose, with the exception of investments. For example, we won't authorize the use of loan funds to purchase stock in IBM or anything like that. Then we have emergency loans, which that pretty much has always had funding when there's a production or a physical disaster out there. You should have a sheet towards the end of your packet, just a one-page matrix that lays out the direct loans and guaranteed loans. This is something I always keep handy as I travel around and visit with folks. Pretty straightforward. Direct operating loans and direct farm ownership loans are loan limit is $300,000 in that. For emergency loans, we can lend up to $500,000. Guaranteed loans, the loan limit is $1.119 million, and that changes each October 1st based on the prices paid index to farmers, so that has been going up. So when you combine the direct and guaranteed loans, you end up with about $1.5 million or so for lending authorities. So we at times are viewed as being just pro-big agriculture, anti-big agriculture, pro-small agriculture, anti-small agriculture. I like to tell people, Mr. Chairman, that we're just pro-agriculture. Last year I was on the phone, this lady called me up. She was looking for 100 baby chicks to raise organically. And I'm trying to do in my head the math, okay, how much loan do you need? And she is an attorney, okay? Next, I get a phone call from a farmer or from a lender that wants a guaranteed loan on a hog operation that produces 50,000 head of pigs a year. So we're very diverse is kind of the point of my story. Dairy cows, Tom, I don't know what the smallest number of head is.
Probably
10. We have loans with a number of Amish families, and I think the largest is probably 1,400 and some head that I'm aware of. So we're very diverse. We try to work with people. With that, loan decision, we look at basic eligibility factors. You got to have repayment ability, basically dollar for dollar. Collateral, we can go dollar for dollar. Again, I talked a little bit about the test for credit. You can't get credit on your own for some reason, but you do need to have acceptable credit history, need to have adequate education. We get calls the time people watch television, see a cow on TV, and they want to buy a dairy farm, and they never set foot on a farm. So Tom and I deal with that.
Mr. Shelsa?
Yes.
You said the acceptable credit history. I'm just asking because you earlier said that if people are in a financial crisis, what is the determination as to an acceptable credit history and then now this person's in crisis, so where's the line?
Okay. That too is an excellent question, Mr. Chairman. There's, I guess I would put it this way. Most of the folks are going to have some type of credit issues, obviously, but we'll look at whether or not it was beyond their control, whether or not they deliberately elected to not pay somebody when they had the ability. So usually it's really rare that people would be denied a loan due to creditworthiness. Most of this, it's their good outstanding people. It's just beyond their control. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Okay. Let's go to the next one. Repayment ability. I mentioned that if it's even one-to-one, when we do our cash flow, detailed cash flows, we can go ahead and make the loan, so we don't have any special requirements there. Collateral, we will take collateral that's available up to and including up to 150% of the loan amount for direct loans. For guaranteed loans, the lender will negotiate that with the applicant, what the security will be, and as long as it's one-to-one, we're fine with that for the most part. So the guaranteed loans, like I say, the demand is really just increased. We go to this guaranteed example here. I'll just briefly run through it. $100,000 loan, we issue a 90% guarantee. The farmer defaults, the lender liquidates the collateral. There's $30,000 left, and we'll pay the 90%, the $27,000 loss there. If we move on to RFA, I'd like, Mr. Chairman, if it's okay with you, just to visit a little bit with our working relationship with the Department of Agriculture here at the state level. We continually work with the Rural Finance Authority and their programs. We don't duplicate services. Matter of fact, this last December, they too went out on some of our meetings. Tom, was there probably about 300 lenders that we jointly met with? And actually, we have a memorandum of understanding with the state that we did 16, 17 years ago, where we'll waive guaranteed loan fees in certain cases. It's been very successful. We've just had a really good working relationship with the folks at the Department of Agriculture here. And there's some examples here. We'll take a second lien, and RFA, they'll do their 45% business with the lender. I guess here at the in St. Paul, we don't track. I just know it's being done. You hear about it. We have no tracking mechanism for all the times that we partner with RFA, and a lot of times the lender will not only get the benefit of the RFA reduced interest rate, or the farm family will benefit, but they'll also sell it on the secondary market. So kind of working together, it's kind of a win-win deal. Tom, what am I missing?
Well, I think you got everything you could say in about 15 minutes there.
Covered a lot of stuff, Mr. Chairman, in a short period of time.
I certainly would be busy. You know, available afterwards or at any other time to hit us up for questions.
Mr. Shell, so we have a question. Representative Morrow?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for your indulgence. I'll try to make this quick. Is there a way that the state could be helping with the demand for guaranteed loans?
Mr. Shell said.
If I understood your question correctly, Mr. Morrow, is we kind of are doing that, I think, already with the guarantee, where we'll probably have a direct loan out there together with the guarantee, having the same property as security, and the state through RFA is coming in and through the bonding process getting a reduced interest rate. So we got about, I think, at least three things going on there. Does that answer your question?
I think so. I'm trying to understand, and I apologize for not knowing, about whether RFA has a loan guarantee program, and if it doesn't, should it?
Mr. Shelston.
Tom.
Well, first
Tom.
Off,
Tom, would you introduce yourself?
Well, yeah, I'm Tom DeCock, one of the farm loan specialists at FSA. First off, we'd certainly recommend that RFA speak about the details of their programs and what they can do best. But
sure.
Generally, what they do is they when a commercial lender goes to RFA, the RFA will buy off 45% of the loan, and that money then is at a reduced interest rate for the farmer. And then the bank will be kind of in the middle. They'll work with RFA on one hand, and simultaneously they'll be working with FSA on a guarantee on the other side. Sometimes we work together, sometimes we're not working with each other. Our portfolio is much larger than RFA's. But it's up to the lender. the commercial lender to decide if he wants to come to FSA or to RFA or to both.
Any other further questions for the testifiers? Mr. Shelstead, have you anything else to add to your testimony?
I just briefly, Mr. Chairman, thank you so much to you and all the members inviting us here for this opportunity to tell our story a little bit. And we try to do marketing efforts and let people know about us. But it's a little bit like probably all of us, that you don't look to the FSA credit programs until you need them. And I don't pay attention to car sale advertisements until I'm in the market and I need one. The biggest concern that I have is funding. Where will we be? Historically, Congress has funded these programs well. If in the shakeup of things out in D.C. they don't, I think we're going to have serious problems nationally in Minnesota. So that's the biggest concern.
Well, Mr. Shelstead, we appreciate your testimony here and the fact that for some of us who are brand new to the committee and brand new to the legislature and have not had experience with, but are going to have people coming and contacting them regarding their concerns and their situations as farmers or even people who have farmed once or want to get back into the situation, hopefully this will give them the opportunity to say, oh, you can contact your agency and get some, and they can get a phone number, and you have a website there and an email too. So we appreciate the opportunity to get that information. Members, if you have questions for them afterwards, be sure to do that. Come up to them, talk to them. Any parting comments, Mr. Shelton?
Just a big thank you to all of you. It's a pleasure to serve the public.
Thank you. And members, we have got to be over on the floor by 11:30. Anything else for the good of the cause here? A note here for the committee members. There will be no committee meeting next Tuesday. Tomorrow Thursday. I'm sorry, I'm reading into things. I wish it was next Tuesday. No, because that's... You know, that's an important day. Anyway, tomorrow, no committee meeting tomorrow, and the next meeting will be Tuesday, February 15th. So with that, this meeting is adjourned.